Hello and welcome to the first episode of the American Pipeline Podcast for this season here at the Hockey News, presented by BetMGM. I'm Jacob Stoller from the Hockey News, alongside one of my co-hosts this year, Dylan Lokes. Dylan, pumped to be doing this with you, man.
Yeah, excited to be here. Excited to get going and help out. So thanks for having me.
What do you mean? That's like going to your own house and saying thanks for having me to your roommate, man. We're in this together.
Yeah,
you're my co-pilot on this. What are you talking about? So for the first episode today, we kind of want to give an overview of what the show is going to be like, a little sneak peek of what you'll be hearing from us weekly, a little bit about ourselves. But first, let's talk to you, Dylan. Like, tell us a bit about yourselves. I'm sure some readers recognize your name from your work with the Hockey News, but fill us in where we can find your work and what you're all about.
Yeah, so I just started at the Hockey News this year, but I've done a bunch of Gopher hockey reporting these last couple of years. This is my third year on that. I do that for a website called Gopher Hole. So I'm basically at every single Gopher hockey home game here in Minnesota. And then I recently got the gig to do Wild hockey for the Hockey News. And then I've kind of expanded into a bigger role doing NCAA coverage as well. So really trying to get college hockey more broad than just Gopher hockey coverage. So I'm trying to look at other teams, things like that, and provide good coverage there. But yeah, you can follow on the Twitter, DylanLokes4, or just stay in touch with the Hockey News Wild site and the NCAA site and Gopher Hole 2 for any Gopher coverage that you want as well. So
that's awesome. Yeah. So you're at Wild games all the time and then Gopher as well. You must have some pretty jam packed weeks.
Yeah, I would say there's, and then with high school season coming up too, I'm also scout for junior hockey team. So I would say pretty much at the rink almost every single day, but I love it, love hockey. So there's definitely no complaining about that. But yeah, it's Wild games at night, Gopher games on the weekend, Wild practices in the morning, things like that, but definitely can't complain.
That's awesome. What team do you scout for?
The Utah Outliers. So they're an NCDC team. They were in the USPHL last year, but we moved up this year to the NCDC. So
that's awesome. That's great. And for those that don't know, I'm Jacob, as I mentioned at the start, write for thehockeynews.com, write for the magazine and host the AHL, ECHL, and now the Pipeline podcast. I write about kind of a whole slew of things, NHL stuff for the website, AHL and ECHL for the magazine. And then, of course, on the podcast, the A and the E is the AHL and ECHL. It's kind of a Swiss Army knife, but yeah, I'm excited to do some college hockey with Dylan. Even though I don't qualify as someone in the American pipeline, I'm Canadian, so hopefully you don't hold that against me too much. But I am the closest to Minnesota, so I guess I'm kind of in the Gopher territory as well. You know, it's interesting. So to start, I guess the first question before we get to our topic I'm curious about is, like, when you're covering college hockey and you're kind of in the first couple of weekends, is there a bit of a fill out process? Like, how long do you think it takes to really get an idea of how good the teams are and who's really at the top and who's in the middle? Does it take a few weeks?
Yeah, I would say even like a month or so. Like, some teams historically always start slow, some teams always start fast, things like that. Like, the Gophers specifically are off to a 3-3 start this year, and like, coming into the season, they're ranked as number one. Now they're only 500. They've been passed by other teams, things like that. I just think college hockey in general is like, you got to give them weeks, but you also maybe a month or two, and then you can start kind of figuring out, okay, this is where this team will probably finish the season based on how they've started, things like that. But you can't really get too ahead of the game and only look at sample sizes of like six games. But once you reach like the 15 game mark, somewhere around there, I think you can start actually seeing where some of these teams will finish.
That makes sense. And one team that we can say is off to a very hot start is the Wisconsin Badgers, 7-1-0 to start the season, coming off a sweep in Minnesota. They are coming off 2 years with Tony Granato, where you just let go this offseason. Two rough years for the program, but on the upswing. What's going on in Wisconsin?
Yeah, well, I think it starts with their head coach, Mike Hastings. He's obviously had a real good track record with Mankato, and I know Gopher fans know him very well. A couple years back, Mankato beat Minnesota in the Frozen Four, and throughout the years in the regular season, Hastings and wherever he's coached has always done very well against Minnesota, but specifically Wisconsin off to a 7-1 start. I think they're kind of not to say that they're like really surprising people, but I don't think a lot of fans or college hockey in general expected them to be off of this good of a season. They just came off of a sweep over previously number one ranked Minnesota. But this weekend, I would say, is an even bigger test for them. They're facing Michigan at home, another very good team, another very good Big Ten team. But over the last couple of years, Wisconsin struggled in the Big Ten. You know, last year they only had, I think it was like two or three Big Ten wins. And to quickly change over this year, already off to a 7-1 start, have already won two Big Ten games in the first two games they've played. It's obviously good signs if you're a Badger fan, and they definitely have the talent and the guys on their roster to do that. So I guess that doesn't come at that big of a surprise, but with the new coach in Mike Hastings, not only are they getting better play, but they're now getting more recruits. And I think that was some of the thing that, not to say like Granada lacked of, but it seemed like they were missing on a lot of top recruits, but now they're getting a lot more of that. So that obviously helps for the future and for now. But yeah, they're off to a really, really good start. 7-1 obviously is a great record to start the season, and they've slid up in rankings as well.
Was there a big turnover from the roster personnel wise, or is it the same group relatively?
It's relatively the same group. I mean, like Cruz Lucius was there last year, had a really good year. I think he was a point per game. He's still on the team this year. Matthew D. St. Fowl was there last year. But they brought in like Brady Cleveland. They got a new goaltender. A new starter essentially this year. So I think it's basically the same roster a little bit, but it's just new coaching, it's new views, it's new eyes, things like that, and it's clicked so far. So
absolutely. And it's funny too, because when you're looking at, you said how they struggle in the Big Ten, do you think that a program like that's an issue too in terms of wanting to change that, or does that not matter as much in terms of their interconference play?
I think totally it matters. Like obviously you want to do good in the Big Ten. If you're having a season outside of that where you're not competing, you probably won't make the NCAA tournament. But if you can have a good Big Ten record, you know, every team's goal should be to try to win, you know, a Big Ten title, regular season title, the Big Ten championship, whatever it is. So I think that was a big reason why as well. But so far they're off to a good enough start where winning a Big Ten or, you know, being close and being competitive is definitely within their reach, also for the NCAA tournament as well.
Absolutely. Now let's go over to our prospect of the week, which is Macklin Celebrini, probably the best and most highly touted draft year prospect since Jack Eichel. I think it's fair to say Boston University, the consensus first overall pick projected in the 2024 draft. How's he starting out in his draft year season so far?
He's been phenomenal. I think he's actually exceeded expectations, which is kind of crazy to say. Coming into the year, we definitely all knew the type of player he was. I mean, tore up the USHL a season ago, but I feel like it's kind of tricky when you're looking at some of those players who accelerate their programs. Like technically he should be a senior in high school, but he's a freshman in college because he was accelerated. So coming into the season, it's just crazy what he's off to. Like already has 8 goals, already has 11 points, just had a 3-goal, 5-point weekend against UMass. Like he's already off to the start that is like, okay, doesn't even look like he's a freshman. He looks like he's playing like he's a junior, a senior. You can see why he's the consensus number one overall pick for this upcoming draft.
How does the acceleration work? I'm not sure I exactly know. Like I know Eichel did that too. Jonathan Taves as well, I think. How does that, do you have to get accepted for that, or do you just have to do it on your own accord and if the team will take you then?
Yeah, I think it's a little both. Like, so there's nowadays where like
you gotta be exceptional, right? Like you gotta be an exceptional prospect.
Yeah, you have to kind of talent that's like to be that good in the USHL or things like that, you have to be that exceptional player to even be considered to accelerate it. Because most guys you hear, like, they don't want to accelerate it. They want to wait. You know, maybe out of high school, you go play, you're in the USHL, then you come in, and now you're a freshman in college when normally you would be a sophomore in college. But he's just a rare case where he's been so exceptional of where he's played and how he's played that
they were able to accelerate him and bring him in as soon as possible.
Yeah, since 2007, 2008, there's only been like eight guys that have done the accelerated program. I've been U18 players in the NCAA, which is pretty astonishing if you really think about it. Like, I think, you know, Matthew Wood last year, Connecticut, was another notable one. Zach Werenski's done it as well. Noah Hanifin. It's a short list for sure. And from what I'm seeing, there are cases where guys don't necessarily do that great off the hop. You know, with Max Lebrun, you said expectations. Like, do you think there was a bit of hesitancy or apprehension of how good he'd be right away? Or do you think that is just, he is way better than anyone could have ever thought?
Yeah, I think maybe, honestly, it's like a little of both. Because, like, when you look at his team in general, they obviously had some high expectations. Last year, they made it to the Frozen Four, lost. But this year, their expectations as a team were high. And obviously, that stemmed from the fact that Celebrini was going to be here and play. But to expect that he would already have 11 points in the first month of the season, to already have 8 goals in 8 games, to win National Rookie of the Month, to win Hockey East Rookie of the Month. I think people thought that it was possible, but for him to do that right away, I think maybe is what where it's surprised a lot of people. But he's such a phenomenal player to watch, and there's no doubt that he'll continue this throughout the season, and that makes Boston a really, really good hockey team.
In terms of, I mentioned how he's one of the most highly touted players, you know, freshman or true freshman, or not even true freshman. What is that, a -1 freshman? Like, what is he considered? Like, if he played next year, would he be a sophomore?
Yeah, he would. But he's probably not going to play next year. Yeah. But
okay.
Yeah, he would be, I'm pretty sure. So,
in terms of, like, also too, the Hockey East, like, fair to say, like, those are the players he's playing against and even with, like, that's an older division in a lot of ways, is it not, in a lot of cases for some of those teams?
You hit it perfectly. Like, you're usually playing against, you know, older guys, a lot of upperclassmen. Even like BU's team in general has some upperclassmen, but like that side of college hockey is where you see kind of those older teams, those grizzled teams, some of the teams with graduate students, things like that. So he's essentially playing guys that are almost 4 years, 5 years older than he actually is, but he's still putting up the points he's putting up, and he's still playing to the best ability that he can, which we've seen is a very elite level. So that just, I think, kind of shows a testament to how good of a player he actually is. And there's no wonder why he's projected to be the consensus #1 overall pick.
I guess one more thing on Celebrini I'm curious about is, you know, when we had McDavid as the first overall pick, it was the speed, Bedard the shot. Where does Max Celebrini kind of factor into that, you know, echelon? Like, what's his kind of bread and butter?
Yeah, you know, you can almost say it's a little both. Like, he's so offensively gifted and has that playmaking ability, but he also, like, you have to respect his shot. Like, you can't just regard that, okay, he's coming in on a 2-on-1, he's going to pass it. No, he's got the ability and he's got the shot to beat you there too. So you have to respect that. And I think when you take a player like that, he's got, like, the total package. Like, he's got the speed, he's got the shot, he's got the creativity, the vision, the playmaking ability that, sure, he's got 8 goals right now and only 3 assists, but he could very well, it could be the other way around too, you know what I mean? So I think that's what makes him so dynamic, is that on a given night, he could record 4 assists and no goals, or he could record 4 goals and no assists, you know? So I think that's what makes him so unique in that sense, just the way he plays.
For sure. I'm excited to see him in the World Juniors. That should be fun. I love when the top ranked prospects, like the big time guys, are having massive performances. Like, it's awesome. I think it's the most fun part of it, frankly. Another segment we'll be doing regularly that will debut here is our team of the week. And this week we're going to do the Carolina Hurricanes prospects. And just for starters, the Hurricanes, they've been one of those teams that have drafted really well year after year, whether it's not even just the first round, but the later round gems. They've always seemed to find quality talent, whether it's from the USHL, NCAA, whatever it is. They seem to really have a knack for that. And we're going to feature a couple of those players, starting with Scott Morrow, defenseman, college hockey.
Yeah, plays for UMass, second round pick, 2021. He was the 40th overall pick by the Hurricanes. He's a big defender, but he's got kind of a creative side to him. Like, he can put up the points at the NCAA level, but he's also extremely reliable in the defensive zone, which I think that's where a lot of, you know, the hype comes around. He's 6'2". He's a little bit on the bigger side. I think he's got a little bit of a physical game to him that comes out every now and then, but he's extremely gifted offensively, plays real good defensively, and is kind of a leader on that UMass hockey team.
Absolutely. And, you know, with Morrow as well, like, it's always hard to chart out exactly where guys are, like how far away they are. It also depends on if they're going to sign after the year. But it's his junior season. Is this his last year of college, if you had to guess?
I would say probably. But then again, like, if you look at the Hurricanes D-Corps right now, like, that's a very, very strong part of their team.
Yes.
So then again, like, you don't necessarily have to rush him. If he has an outstanding season and maybe come, you know, almost playoff time for the Hurricanes, their D-Corps might be banged up, hurt, whatever it is. Maybe he can slide right in and play. But, you know, like you said, playing as an upperclassman, this could be his last year. But then again, Carolina definitely doesn't have to rush him.
For sure. And who knows, maybe he wants to return for one last dance, depending how the season goes. Next prospect will feature Bradley Nadeau of University of Maine.
Yeah, obviously a very skilled forward. He had a really good season last year. Now he's coming into a Maine hockey club that probably doesn't get a lot of hype, but he's a very good player in itself. A little bit on the smaller side. I think he's already off to a good start this season. Point per game player, 2 goals, 2 assists. His shot is, you know, top of the notch. He's also got some speed, a little bit of physicality to him, which is nice when you look at, you know, players that are on the smaller side of things. Definitely something that you want to see. And yeah, his speed and shot and skill are something to keep an eye out for.
For sure. Next up, Cruz Lucius. We kind of mentioned him. We talked about the Badgers, but another Carolina prospect playing at Wisconsin.
Yeah, he had a really good year last year on a Wisconsin team that was not good. So that was good to see. I believe he was a point per game player. I want to say he had almost like 34 points in 30 some games for Wisconsin. So the fact that he was doing that, you know, not playing on that good of a team is a bright spot for Hurricanes. But he was a later draft pick, 4th round. Carolina scooped him up, but very, very fast. I think that's probably like his biggest asset. He wants the puck. He'll go get it himself. It's not a guy that's going to wait for, you know, his teammates to pass for him. And last year playing on the Wisconsin team, I guess he arguably couldn't have just waited for people to set him up. But he's got his shot. We saw it last weekend. He scored a couple against Minnesota, which actually he was committed to before he then decommitted and committed to Wisconsin. But he's their, essentially their number one guy, so they're expecting him to produce day in and day out, and he's done that so far.
Am I wrong? Didn't he decommit like once his brother left the Gophers? Like, weren't they going to play together?
Yeah, so Chaz played his freshman year with the Gophers. He got hurt in February, missed the rest of the season, and then Winnipeg pulled him out. He then, I think he went to the WHL, or he went to the Canadian Hockey League. I know he played over there.
Yeah, he split last year between the A and the Dub.
Yeah, and then obviously the AHL. But yeah, they both committed to the Gophers. They were like 14. So
wow.
The plan was always for them to play together. And then once Chaz left before his sophomore season, Cruz pulled the plug, decommitted, went to Wisconsin, had a great year. But you can tell, like, he brings out his game when he's playing Minnesota. So
that's awesome. Speaking of family connections, Jackson Blake, son of Jason Blake.
Yeah. Played his high school hockey in Minnesota with Eden Prairie. Helped Eden Prairie win a state championship. This is another guy that you get his best out of him whenever he's playing the Gophers. It's always someone that is all over the ice, like, flies past defenders, uses his speed to create chances, things like that. He's very good stick handler, puck mover. He's got a little bit of playmaking to him. Another guy who's kind of on the smaller side, which people sort of knock just because they think that some teams think size doesn't translate, things like that. So Hurricanes picked him up late in the draft. And he's a very skilled hockey player, and someone to definitely keep an eye on this season for North Dakota. And I would say he's essentially their number one guy. Like, you always see him getting the top minutes, always making the best plays, and he's helped North Dakota a lot.
Should name this episode Gopher Trauma, because all these guys just keep shredding up the Gophers. Last one will feature Jaden Perron of North Dakota, drafted last year in the third round. I remember him being projected to go a little bit higher, but he slipped and he's off to a solid start with North Dakota.
Yeah, kind of the same thing. I think you can kind of see a trend with the Hurricanes is they don't care if guys are small. Like, that's not a that's not a thing that worries them, because Perron's another one like Blake, and they sometimes get to play together on the same line, but you'll see them on the power play together, and it's sort of the same thing. Like, Perron has a very good shot. I wouldn't say he necessarily uses it as much as he probably should, but it's there, and I think teams know, and they'll figure out soon enough that it is a deadly shot. But yeah, he's a good skater. He can play good defensively as well. I think, though, it's probably going to be a while before he maybe, you know, has that translate to the AHL or even NHL. So yeah, he'll probably play a couple of years, you know, maybe until he's a junior or even senior with North Dakota. But if you're there and you're watching games, he's a guy that's probably going to bring you out of your seat. And when he gets the chance to play with Blake, obviously that's probably music to a lot of Hurricanes fans' ears. So those two guys in general are very, very good.
Absolutely. You can always kind of tell with guys where they may have the skill, but that they might be in college for a bit longer. No, you can kind of always tell if they'll need a couple years.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of guys where it's like, okay, he's got that potential and he's got this one skill that's like almost NHL ready, but he's got a couple other skills that need to develop, and playing, you know, 3-4 years of college hockey, it's going to do that. Maybe even playing a year in the AHL, things like that. But I would say he's definitely one of those prospects where it's like he has the offensive skills. Maybe he needs to work a little bit on, you know, the compete, the defensive skills, the physical skills, things like that. But he's still a very good hockey player right now.
Awesome. Good stuff. Well, that's it for today's episode. A bit of a shorter one. We'll usually be a bit longer, but we want to just, you know, dip our toes into the water before really taking off here. But thanks, Dylan, for coming on for the first show. I'm excited to do this with you this year. And then next week, we'll have a little intro episode with our other host that will be rotating in and out with Dylan. We'll keep you stay tuned on that one. But until then, we'll sign off here and take care, folks.